Merħba bikom għal edizzjoni oħra ta' Minajnejn Barranin. Illum edizzjoni da' xej differenti mis-soltu, nistgħu ngħidu edizzjoni speċjali. Illum għandi intervista ma' ċertu Thor Pedersen mid-Danimarka, illi ma' għex f'Malta jew ma' jgħix f'Malta bħal maġġoranza tal-mistiedna li jkolli f'din is-sensiela, però ġi Malta bħala waħda miż-żjarat li jagħmel f'kull pajjiż tad-dinja, użar il-pajjiżi kollha tad-dinja fuq perjodu ta' bosta snin, imma ġifieri wara xulxin, perjodu li beda u spiċċa, mhux żar tliet pajjiżi u ma tmarlura pajjiżu u ġej sejjeru hekk. Għamel proġett fejn żar kull pajjiż tad-dinja mingħajr ma uża ajruplan, però l-unika persuna fid-dinja li qatt għamlet dan. Qatt muża ajruplan, uża biż vapuri, ferroviji, jew mixi, jew karozzi, insomma, biex imur minn pajjiż għal ieħor. U dan huwa proġett li anka issemma minn bosta stazzjonijiet internazzjonali tal-aħbarijiet bħal CNN, bħal BBC, dan Thor Pedersen meta ikkonkluda dan il-vjaġġ epiku li jagħmel fost il-pajjiżi li żar, żar Malta wkoll, u f'din l-intervista se nisimgħu x'jaħseb dwar Malta, ovvjament, imma wkoll x'jaħseb dwar bosta pajjiżi oħrajn li żar u anka jispjegana dwar dan il-vjaġġ kif għamlu, kif żvolġa u l-affarijiet li ħarġu minn dan il-vjaġġ fil-ħajja ta' Thor Pedersen. Għalhekk nibda mill-ewwel bl-intervista u nispera li tieħdu pjaċir tisimgħuha. Campus 103.7, it's my pleasure to welcome on the show via internet link, of course, Thor Pedersen from Denmark. Welcome, Thor.
Thank you so much, Colin.
And I've been reading about you on various international news sites, BBC, CNN. I mean, you made every single probably major news site in the world because of your wonderful adventure of going around the world, which is already an adventure in itself. You've visited every single country in the world, so yeah, big adventure there, but you refused to use aeroplanes. You went around the world visiting every single country using all modes of transport except aircraft.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay, let's get this out of the way. Any particular reason about why you didn't want to use aeroplanes?
Yeah, I'm the first person in history to visit every country in the world completely without flying. So it was the achievement within it. About 300 people, maybe less than 300 people have been to every country in the world. Two people have done it in one go. So they left home and they didn't come back until they clocked all the countries in the world. And I'm one of those two people. I'm the only one who did it completely without flying.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It's incredible to meet somebody who's done something completely unique. It's not something you do every day. So,
thank you.
And your trip lasted 10 years in total, I believe.
Yeah, close to 10 years. It was exactly 9 years, 9 months and 16 days. So close to a decade.
And 203 countries, because you also visited countries that are not actually recognized by the United Nations.
Yes, that's correct. So it's a very interesting debate amongst people. What is a country? What is not a country? Mm-hmm. And I think in many cases, you should find a good bottle of red wine and put it on the table and ask people, what is a country? And you'll have a fun evening. I went to Greenland, I went to Taiwan, I went to a number of places that are not officially United Nations.
Including, for example, places like Northern Cyprus, which Turkey believes is a separate country, and Cyprus doesn't. Transnistria in Moldova.
No, also not.
Okay.
No, I don't count Transnistria. I didn't count Northern Cyprus. I just counted Moldova and I counted Cyprus.
Okay.
But the additional countries that I included on top of the United Nations list would be, first of all, I split the UK. So I went to England, Wales, to Northern Ireland and Scotland.
Very good.
I split the Danish kingdom. So I also went to Faroe Islands and to Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
Then I included Western Sahara and I included Kosovo and I included Taiwan.
Okay, so of course, because there are question marks, but historically they could be considered, all these countries, a separate landmass and therefore their own country. I understand your reasoning. Wonderful.
You.
So that's just incredible. Also, one has to say that we had the global pandemic slap bang in the middle of your trip. So that complicated matters somewhat.
It did indeed. Yeah, that probably set me back more than 3 years, I imagine.
What did you do for a living and or what do you do for a living? And how did you decide to or why did you decide to make this trip?
Well, my background starts within business school. I went to business school for 3 years, aiming to work within shipping and logistics. Then I was drafted to the military and I served a 1 year military service in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up for international duty and had 2 years of international soldiering, you can say, experience. I was a United Nations peacekeeper.
Peacekeeping,
and,
yes.
Sent on a mission to the Horn of Africa.
Oh, wow.
And then I came back after that. And then finally, I found my way to shipping and logistics. So I worked 12 years. The first 4 years in Denmark and then the last 8 years in different countries on different projects. I was 2 years in Libya. I was 1 year in Bangladesh. I worked in Kazakhstan, in Azerbaijan. I worked in the Arctic, in Greenland, many places around the world.
So that should be book one of your book that you eventually write, because that's already a lot of different places before this whole 10-year trip, Thor.
Yes.
That's amazing. But unfortunately, time being what it is, we'll have to focus on the round the world trip. Maybe we'll do another interview about your previous trips and experiences another time. So then you decided, I'm going to go around the world.
Yeah, that all started in early 2013. It was back in January and my father, he sent me an email and I followed the link and I was reading about people who had gone to every country in the world. And back in 2013, this was the first time I realized it was possible. I didn't think you could go to every country in the world, not unless if you were a millionaire or if you spent your entire life trying. I believe back in 2013, the most traveled man from Denmark, he almost reached every country in the world and he died of age. And he spent entire life and he didn't achieve it. So I found out that many people had gone to every country, about 200 people back in 2013. And I discovered that no one had done it completely without flying. And that really intrigued me.
Fantastic. So how do you go about preparing for such a trip? I mean, do you pack lots of money? Do you pack lots of changes of clothes? Do you sort of start contacting embassies around the world? Or did you sort of go to the first two countries and then started off, sort of did it as you went along, getting visas and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a mix of everything that you said. So initially, I didn't plan to go to every country without flying. I just thought it was interesting. And I continued to think about it. And 1 week took the next. And eventually, I bought a map and I said, okay, I'm not going to do this, but I just want to play with the idea. So I was looking at the map and I had a blue pen and a red pen and I drew in two different alternative routes because the logistics is very important when you're not flying. You have to make sure that you shorten the distance as much as possible or else you'll be spending a lot of extra time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking about how much time would I spend in a country. If you spend, for instance, 7 days in every country in the world, then it's close to 4 years to complete the project. If you spend 1 month in every country in the world, then it's close to 16 years to complete the project.
So you wanted to visit the countries and learn a bit about them and experience them, not just touch down, say, I've done it, and then move on to the next country. Is that correct?
Again, initially, I think it was more about the countries as just get to them, get to the next one. And then when you consider the size of a project like that, that you're going to so many countries and you're spending so much time, I thought that the adventures, they would just come automatically and throughout going. And I would experience a lot of things, that I would meet people and taste food and see places. But I was also aware that most of my time would be spent on logistics and on bureaucracy. A lot of time would be spent in trains and in buses and on board ships as well. The project changed after maybe a few weeks after I left home. It went from being a country project to being a people project. So I found that it was much more important to focus on the people that I was meeting around the world, and indeed also try to shine some positive light on the countries that I was going through. In my experience, a lot of people, they talk poorly about other countries without even having been there or having no good reason for it. So maybe you hear about a country in the news and you think, oh, they are living in the 50s or they're still living in caves and they're less educated and they have less culture. And then when you go to these countries, you'll often find that it's completely opposite, that there are a lot of surprising elements to basically every country I've been to, and that the level of development or level of so many things, technology and education is much, much higher than you expect. So I tried to promote this as well.
So you left Denmark, and could you take us maybe briefly around the world, sort of the direction you took and how you ended up back in Denmark before we go into some details?
Okay, here we go. I started in Denmark on the 10th of October 2013 at 10:10 a.m. So it was 10:10, 10:10.
And your family came to see you off, I guess?
My father was there and my childhood friend was there. And I crossed into Germany and then I was off. And I started by visiting the central part of Europe and Western Europe. And then I spiraled back over the North Atlantic and came to North America to Central America and into South America, down the West Coast, up the East Coast, then into the Caribbean and clocked all the island nations there. Then I was done with the Western Hemisphere and I got on a ship that took me back east across the Atlantic Ocean, back to Europe, so I could go to Spain. And from Spain, I could take a ferry into Morocco, and then I was in Africa. Then I did Western Africa and Central Africa and Southern Africa and Eastern Africa, went into the Indian Ocean, came back to Eastern Africa and Northern Africa. I was done with Africa, came back to Europe. Then I did the eastern part of Europe, and eventually I came to Malta as well. And then I went to the Middle East and finished the Middle East, which took about 10 months. And then I was in Asia, and then there was Central Asia, and Central Asia took me to Eastern Asia, and then to Southeastern Asia, and then into the South Pacific, into the North Pacific. Then I got stuck in Hong Kong for 2 years. Then I continued throughout the Pacific, and then finished off by going to Sri Lanka and the Maldives before heading back home.
Amazing. And you've learned that by heart. You've probably been asked many times to recite that little poem.
Well, that's true, but also I did it, so it's a part of my life, and of it's course. Easy to remember your life, usually.
Ħanieq fuftit minn l-intervista ma' Thor Pedersen mid Danimarka dwar il-vjaġġ tiegħu madwar id-dinja f'kull pajjiż tad-dinja mingħajr ma' uża ajruplani biex nisimgħu silta mużikali minn pajjiżu mid-Danimarka. Din id-diska, silta mużikali, hija silta folk minn grupp nispera li qed ngħidhom tajjeb, Asinje, u d-diska jisima Her Oluf, hija tradizzjonali, hija tħares lura lej l-istorja tal-Vikingi illi ħarġu mid-Danimarka.
Dansen, den går så let gennem London. Og da han kom ud i London så grøn, en elver dansker så let og skøn. Dansen, den går så let gennem London. Den elver dronning rækker hånden frem, for Olaf, Olaf, træ danse med mig. Dansen, den går så let gennem London. Jeg ikke kan, og jeg ikke må. I morgen skal mit bryllup stå, mens dansen den går så let gennem lunden. gossa lätken in London. Og vil du ikke blive hos mig, sort og sygdom skal følge dig. Så slog hun ham i hans hjerte god, så slaget hjalp i hans hjerte til din faste med kær. En dansen, den går så let gennem London. Og da han kom til borgeren led, der rendte der blod fra sæden ned. Mens dansen, den går så let gennem London. De skænkte mjød, og de skænkede vin. Hvor er her Olaf, brudgommen min? Mens dansen, den går så let gennem London.
Issa nirritornaw għall-intervista ma' Thor Pedersen fejn Thor jgħidilna dwar l-esperjenza tiegħu f'pajjiżna f'Malta.
So of interest to our listeners here in Malta, although we have international listeners as well, we're on the internet of course. Malta, what are your recollections of your visit here? When was it, if you can remember, and your recollections of, I mean, had you ever been here before? What can you tell us about your trip here?
It was my first time to Malta, and I was finishing visiting all the countries in Africa, and I was in Egypt, and I still had to go to Libya and Tunisia and Algeria. And Libya was complex to visit, and I had a hard time getting the visa from Egypt. So I was trying to see how can I go from Egypt maybe to Tunisia, and then enter Libya from Tunisia. And it was my hopes that I would visit all the countries in Africa without leaving the African continent. But eventually I had to get on board a container ship from Egypt, and I came to Malta, which was still one of the remaining countries. And I came to Marsaszlok.
Marsaszlok, yes, very good.
Okay.
That's right, the big container port.
Yes, and my father was there to receive me in Marsaszlok. And so I got to see him for the first time in a long time. And we had a great time. And Malta is so beautiful and so friendly and so interesting.
That's nice.
So we had some good days together. And then my father, he flew back to Denmark. And I spent a lot of time networking in Malta with Libyans. And I went to the Libyan embassy, and I was trying to find out if I could get a visa. Maybe I could get on a ship from Malta to Libya. But it was a very, very difficult time. and I spent about a month. There was a British couple of expats living there. They're working in the gaming industry, developing games, and they took me in. So I was a house guest with them, and they were foodies, and they made amazing food for me.
How did you meet this couple? Randomly? I mean,
I don't even remember. I think maybe they reached out to me. Maybe they reached out to me on Facebook and said, you know, when you come to Malta, you have a home.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So but then there's this guy, Luke, that I met, who's from Malta, who's absolutely amazing. And he drove me around and he was showing me a lot of interesting places.
Oh,
and,
how nice.
Taking me to different cafes and bars. And,
yes.
Yeah, really, really good guy. Then I'm really interested in history, and Malta has thousands and thousands of years of history, Mediterranean history, but there's certainly history that we don't even maybe know the origins of some of it.
True.
Which I thought was really interesting. And one thing that really drew me in was this story, which is it's a huge tourist destination now, but it's this story about two men that were digging a hole near a house. They were trying to make for catching rainwater, I think, or something like this. And suddenly they punch a hole through the bottom and they find this ancient cave in three layers.
Yes, the hypogeum, it's called.
The hypogeum, yes, that's right.
Yes, in Tashin, yes.
So as soon as I could, I got a ticket so I could go and see the hypogeum, because that was really interesting.
It is. It's a very mysterious place. They've even found somewhere deep inside skulls with an elongated head, which lead to conspiracy theories about aliens and everything. but it's a very mysterious and holy and amazing sight. I'm glad you got to see the hypogeum.
Yeah,
yes,
and I had an amazing time in Malta. And while I was there, the weather was beautiful and the food was good and people were nice. So eventually I did not succeed in getting the visa for Libya. And I spoke to a company that had a vessel that goes from Malta to Libya. And they said the last time they went to Libya, someone was shooting at their vessel. So they came back with bullet holes.
Oh dear.
And I decided maybe it was not the safest route to Libya. And I connected with a ferry to
Tunisia.
No, there was a ferry to Sicily.
Sicily. Mm-hmm.
And then with a second ferry from Sicily to Tunisia. And then I managed to enter Libya from Tunisia, come back to Tunisia, and then go to Algeria. And then finally I was done with Africa.
I have to ask this question, although I admire you for just going ahead and doing this. But, you know, you hear these stories about shooting, and Libya unfortunately went through a phase. It's getting better now, apparently. I was just reading. But, you know, divided into two governments and the occasional skirmishes. Some places have even worse things happening. And you were still determined to go and enter the country, whatever problems that we were faced with, even if these countries have the reputation of being dangerous. And it takes a special kind of person, I think, to just be determined and do it.
That's a very, very nice way to say it. Yeah. Maybe it takes a crazy person to go there.
A little bit risk-taking, yes.
So I lived and worked in Libya during the time of Muammar Gaddafi. So I've seen a lot of the country and I know the culture, and I know a lot about Libya from the old times in Libya. This is 2005, 2006. So I'm very saddened about the current state of Libya. And what I did was, obviously, I did a lot of research, as much research as I possibly could, to try to understand what might be the safest option for me, where could I go, and a little bit of risk assessment. I eventually ended up entering Libya during the Eid al-Fitr. And the thinking was that it would be a little more safe during the Eid, because people would be celebrating and it would be religious and about family and about love. And I met this Libyan businessman in Tunisia, and he guaranteed my safety. So
that's
you never have any real guarantees, but he guaranteed my safety. And there was a policeman at the border who collected me on the border between Tunisia and Libya. And he took me to one of the first cities in Libya coming from the west heading east. And then I met with the businessman and his family, and I spent some time with them. And yeah, mm-hmm. after two nights, back to Tunisia and then yeah. On my way again.
Tell us about the 2 years you spent in Hong Kong because of COVID.
Yeah, so it's very interesting because Hong Kong was not on my list of places I had to visit. I count Hong Kong as a part of China.
China, yes.
And I had already been to China, so there was no need to go to Hong Kong, except I was in Micronesia and I was trying to go to Palau in the North Pacific. And the shipping company I was collaborating with, they didn't have a direct connection between Micronesia and that was the Federated States of Micronesia and Palau. So they said the solution they could offer was to put me on a ship to Hong Kong. And then I do 4 days of transit in Hong Kong. And then I connect with a second ship and go to Palau.
Four days.
Well, this is a good solution. And I'm on board this ship to Hong Kong for 12 days. It's a 12-day voyage and I have no internet connection. So I don't know what's going on in the world. But I know that when I left the Federated States of Micronesia, nobody was talking about viruses. Nobody at all. And when I got to Hong Kong, the captain, he was wearing a face mask and he said I should put on a mask. And he said that there's been an outbreak in a city called Wuhan. And I look at where the heck is Wuhan? And we find out it's 1,000 kilometers, more than 1,000 kilometers away from Hong Kong. And I think this is never going to have anything to do with me. This is just a small local outbreak. But of course, I end up being 2 years in Hong Kong before I can leave again.
Goodness me. That must have been very frustrating.
Very, very frustrating, yes.
Did you at least, the members of your family, manage to come and see you at all? Or was there no travel allowed?
No travel allowed. Hong Kong was very closed. Even Hong Kongers couldn't return to Hong Kong.
Oh, gosh.
It was tightly closed. The border between Hong Kong and mainland China was closed for 3 years. So the entire 2 years that I was there, the border between Hong Kong and mainland China was closed. And also there were no ferries going to Macau. It was very, very severely shut. But what we did find out was that if I had a girlfriend, right? And we were engaged, so she was my fiancée. Mm-hmm. And we found out that if she was my wife, and if I was a resident in Hong Kong, then I could apply for special paperwork uh-huh. and I could get a visa for her and then bring her to Hong Kong. But how do you get married when I'm in Hong Kong and she's in Denmark?
Yes.
And then we discovered that in Utah, in the United States, there's an agency where they marry people online. So in the same way, like through Zoom, right?
Yeah.
So in the beginning, we didn't believe that this was possible. But then we found out that if we do it, then Hong Kong will accept it. So we got married online, and my wife, she got married on December 19, and I got married on December 20th because of the time difference. And then she was able to fly to Hong Kong with the special visa and then do hotel quarantine for 3 weeks. So this is 3 weeks where we're both in Hong Kong, but we cannot be together. And then finally, she came out of quarantine and we spent 100 days together.
Oh,
so she was my only visitor while I was in Hong Kong.
Mijot li ta' putsaba campus dan huwa minajnejn barranin illum edizzjoni speċjali intervista ma' Thor Pedersen illi żar kull pajjiż fid-dinja mingħajr ma' uża ajruplan għadta xi żmien f'pajjiż da' wkoll. Tkellimna dwar dan, issa nieqfu ftit biex nisamgħu silta oħra mużikali mid-Danimarka mill-pajjiż ta' Thor. Din hija silta mużikali mis-snin 60, silta pop mill-kantanta Gitte Herning. Il-kanzunetta jisima Jack Snacker med Migself, jekket najta sew bid-Danis, jid-dispeċini jekle, pero naħseb aħjar tisamaw id-diska u tiġudikaw intom.
Jeg snakker med mig selv, snakker med mig selv, taler med mit bedre jeg. Jeg hyser på mig selv, tyser på mig selv, skænder på mig selv, men nej. Mit hjerte slår på en helt ny måde, og det er en helt ny gåde, som du har givet mig. Jeg snakker med mig selv, snakker med mig selv, taler til den tomme luft.
Jeg truer mig selv, gruer for mig selv, hvor nu min snus fornuft. Mit hjerte slår på en helt ny måde, og det er en helt ny gåde, som du har givet mig. Jeg er tosset og skør og svimmel. Hermon, det er den syvende himmel. Jeg snakker lidt igen, flakker lidt igen, spørg mit hjerte en gang til. Jeg spørger det ganske frit, spørger det ganske blidt, hvad det egentlig er, det ville. For hyrde slår på en helt ny måde, og det er en helt ny gåde, som du har givet mig. Snakker med mig selv. Snakker med mig selv. Selv snakker med mig selv, taler med mit bedre jeg. Jeg hyser på mig selv, tyser på mig selv, skænder på mig selv, men nej. Jeg visker med mig selv, tisker med mig selv, for jeg vil jo godt besked. Lidt godt, når det digge, digge, digger. Sådan jeg så man sikker. Digger det sådan jeg så det kærlighed.
Wara dikittin il-silta mużikali mid-Danimarka, naddu għal aktar informazzjoni, nkomplu l-intervista ma' Thor Pedersen mid-Danimarka illi dar id-dinja żar kull pajjiż mingħajr ma' uża ajruplan u tkellimna dwar l-esperjenzi tiegħu f'Malta għalkemm ħajja jitkellem dwar dan minn hawn u ftit ieħor. Insomma, ejja nkomplu l-intervista waqt din l-edizzjoni speċjali ta' Minajnejn Barranin.
Did you find that when you at first were applying for visas and trying to get from one country to another and telling people your story, you'd find a lot of bureaucracy and people saying, listen, this is impossible. No, 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 go away. No, no, no. But eventually you wore them down with your pleasant smile and your sense of adventure. And then you started finding the same bureaucrats taking pity on you or thinking how cute or sweet that your idea is. And then they go out of their way to help you. How did it work? Because I'm sure the whole world, you know, is full of people just doing their job. And, you know, when they encounter something unusual, you're just extra work for them, not something exciting.
Yeah, no, that's very true. In most cases, I did not get the support I was hoping for. And in most cases, I was denied access and I had to be very creative. So sometimes I'm able to persuade someone over time.
Yeah,
and then come back with more and more incentive for them to help me. And sometimes I need to find someone else who's above them, and then they can put pressure, and then there will be a solution. And sometimes I have to find a completely different solution. But it's very much a case of that on my social media, and when people have been reading my blog and following the journey, they see the success story. So they see that I get the visa, they see I get on board a ship. But the reality is, sometimes I ask 10 different shipping companies and 9 of them say no. And the last one also says no, but I'm able to negotiate with them and I get on board a ship. Or I go to many different embassies and many different consulates to get one visa and gain access to get inside a country. In one case, I spent 3 months going to 4, 5, maybe 6 different embassies and consulates in 2 or 3 different countries. And then after 3 months, I finally had the visa. And then the country still would not allow me to enter, even when I had the visa. So I had to wait an additional 27 days before I found a way to cross the border. So it was 4 months to enter one country.
Gosh, goodness me. What about traveling between countries? You mentioned shipping. You did a lot of traveling on transport ships, passenger ships. Did companies sponsor you? Did you manage to get some trips for free? I mean, as you said in the beginning, you're not a millionaire. So, yes. I mean, traveling around the world, 203 countries, you know, within the countries themselves, you need to pay taxis or buses or coaches or trains. I'm sorry to be direct, but where did the money come from?
Well, project budget was set at $20 per day, which is 20 euros per day. And the budget was set to cover 4 elements. So one was transportation and accommodation and my meals and then my visas. These four elements within 20 euros per day. Now, the 20 euro was not a limit. It was an average. So some days I buy a visa and the visa costs 150 or 200 euros. And some days I spend no money whatsoever. So like when I'm staying with this nice family in Malta, then they're cooking for me and I have a bed to sleep in and I'm walking around. So I'm not spending any money. So it's up and down like that. Most of that money was sponsored by Ross Energy. So Ross Energy is a Danish company that has focus on drilling. They can drill for oil or for gas, but their primary focus is geothermal energy. So they drill for hot water under the surface, and then they bring it up to the surface, and then this can drive a turbine, or this can be used directly. And it's a clean and sustainable form of energy. So they backed the budget. And then I also received money from my followers. So I got donations throughout the years. I also spent some of my private funds. I wrote some articles as I went along. I did speaking engagements as well. But the majority of the money came from Ross Energy.
Okay, so you got a sponsor, you got some fundraising from fans. I see. Did you need to do any work in any of the countries? For example, 2 years in Hong Kong, did you manage to do some work there, perhaps?
Yes. So I didn't need to work in Hong Kong, not for the money at least, because I was sponsored by Ross Energy and I was getting donations from my followers. So this was enough to sustain me financially in Hong Kong. But immigration in Hong Kong, they pushed me to get a job. In the beginning, it was no problem to get a visa extension and everybody understood a global pandemic and there was nothing I can do and there was no way for me to leave Hong Kong. But after 11 months, the immigration was pushing and saying there must be airplanes to Denmark. And I could only agree. I said, I'm sure there are airplanes. But if I get on an airplane, then everything will stop. Then the project is over, and I was only missing 9 countries. Can you imagine? So when I got stuck in Hong Kong with the pandemic, 9 countries to go out of 203. So immigration said, well, the thing you can do is you can change your immigration status. You can start studying and get a student visa, or you can marry someone, or you can get a job. But if you cannot keep extending your visitor's visa. So eventually I got a job in Hong Kong and I worked for the Danish Seafarers Mission. And I was helping seafarers on board container ships because they were quarantined and they couldn't leave the ships. So I would email them and ask them, do you need anything on the ship? And then they would send me a list and I would go and shop everything in Hong Kong and then bring it to the ship. Mm. And I did that for more than a year.
You also had a connection or have a connection with the Danish Red Cross?
Yes, that's correct. I traveled as a goodwill ambassador of the Danish Red Cross, and I've met with the Red Cross in almost every country in the world, in 199 countries around the world, including Malta, which was a very, very nice experience.
Wonderful. So, okay.
Actually, if I can just tell you, I was so lucky that when I was in Malta, the Maltese Red Cross had a huge exercise with a cruise ship. So they coordinated with a cruise ship and the exercise was that there was some sort of maybe a fire or for some reason they had to evacuate the cruise ship. And then you had the Maltese Red Cross on the shore and with all the boats and with the jet skis and all of this coordinating and helping and bringing assistance and first aid and what's it called, psychology and everything. Yeah. It was really, really amazing to see the engagement of the Maltese Red Cross.
Were you involved in that exercise or were you just invited to observe?
I was invited to observe.
Did you know about what we call in Malta the Danish village? There's a relationship between the local General Workers Union, the biggest union of workers in Malta, and a big union in Denmark. And over the years, the Danish General Workers Union had built this complex in one of the bays where there's a nice beach, which we Maltese call the Danish village because they would give incentives for Danish workers and their families to come to Malta and spend time in this place and have their holiday. So, but you weren't aware of that place.
No, I haven't heard about that before, but it sounds really interesting.
So 10 years visiting all the countries of the world, 203 more than all the countries of the world, without ever stepping on an aeroplane. And you left Denmark 10 years, 2013, you arrived back in 2023. What Yes. changes did you see? How did it feel to be back home?
Well, I've been home for a little more than a month now, and I think that the overall process of fully returning home will take many months or many years for me. When I look at myself, I look in the mirror, I see a man who's 10 years older, but someone who maybe gained 50 years of life experience in the past 10 years. When I look at my city, then I see a city which has driven towards sustainable energy.
Where is this, the capital, Copenhagen?
Yeah, in Copenhagen. So mm-hmm. I see a lot of Teslas, which is a surprise because that's an expensive electric car, I think. You also see a lot of charging stations for electrical vehicles. When I left Denmark, I left with the newest iPhone, which was an iPhone 5. And I came back home, and now it's iPhone 14, I think, or something like that. So many things have changed. I see that a lot of the public toilets are no longer for men or for women. It's mixed, so men and women can use them. There are also a lot of signs for a lot of genders that we didn't talk about in 2013. So when I left in 2013, you had man and you had woman. Mm-hmm. But today you have much more than that.
Indeed.
I see more graffiti on the buildings in Copenhagen, which I don't think is a nice thing. But then I see that people are very diverse. So in terms of what people are wearing and clothing and if they have tattoos or no tattoos and long hair and short hair, and just a much more diverse picture when you walk out into the street, which I think is very nice, that you can see that people are accepted pretty much no matter who they are or how they choose to dress. Yeah, there's certainly some changes. There's been a lot of development, new buildings, but Copenhagen is an old city. It's 1,000 years old. So we also still have the old buildings and the old streets. And yeah, some things stayed the same. Some things mm-hmm. changed for sure.
Now you're a married man as well, so...
Yes, two times. So we got married online, as I told you, but that marriage was not accepted by the government in Denmark. So we got married one more time in the Pacific. My wife, she came to visit me in Vanuatu, which is a beautiful island nation in the South Pacific.
Yes.
And we got married on the beach, and then a German woman was helping us, and she was going to process the paperwork. But unfortunately, the government of Vanuatu was attacked by hackers. There was a ransomware attack, and all the data was locked. And this German woman, Tina, she's been trying to do everything she can to help us, but so far, it still hasn't gone through and been validated. So we know that we're married in Utah, and we're married in Hong Kong, and we're married in Vanuatu.
But not in Denmark.
Not yet.
You're living in sin at the moment.
maybe we come to Malta and get married.
Yes, why not? Plenty of lovely places. And I will be your wedding DJ.
Okay, that sounds good.
That will be my gift to you. It will be great. You're always welcome to come back, and you'll have even more people who know about you now, apart from the Luke you mentioned and the people that you met. I'm so glad that you had a good time here, and you had lovely positive things to say about Malta.
Sure.
Thor Pedersen from Denmark. You've been around the world. You've visited 203 countries, some paradise islands, Caribbean and Maldives. You've visited very dense populations, places where we hear in the media that are not so great, but then you went there yourself and found amazing things and lovely people. I don't know, Iran and Syria, Libya, whatever. So you've been to European countries, African countries. You've been around the world, but is there still no place like home?
Well, I think that is true. The home is home. And this is also something I experienced with refugees or internally displaced people, that they're trying their best wherever they are, but they really want to go home. Home for almost everyone is the place where you know the language and you understand the different seasons. This is the home is where your parents, they grew up, and it's where you know the traditions. And In my case, now I'm back in Denmark, and if I see a spider that's crawling across the table, I know I don't have to worry because we have no dangerous spiders in Denmark. But at the same time, if I'm in Uganda or if I'm in Taiwan or Thailand or somewhere else and I see a spider or I see a snake, I have no idea if I should fear for it. In my country, I know everything. I know if I go to buy oatmeal in the supermarket, I know if it's in a bag, in a can, or in a jar, right? If I go to Malta and I'm looking for something, it takes more time. I need to research. I need to investigate. I really don't need to do much investigation or research when I'm home in Denmark. So home is home for sure.
Wasal il-ħin niqfu għall-aħħar darba mill-intervista ma' Thor Pedersen li dar id-dinja mingħajr ma' uża ajruplan żar kull pajjiż inkluż Malta. Miss li nisimgħu t-tielet u l-aħħar silta mid-Danimarka minn pajjiż Thor. Din id-darba ħan nisimgħu mużika riċenti, mużika minn dawn is-snin, is-seklu 21, mużika moderna, Tobias Rahim u d-diska Bellevue.
Kører langs kysten, håret ud i blæsten. Nogle gange tømmer man bedre end selve festen. Nu hvor du er alene, stemmen den er hæs. Man behøver ikke at snakke, smiler eller kæften. Jeg ved vi er der snart, men det er lige ved næsten. Ja, yeah. Ja det er lige ved næsten. Fucking ambitioner, drømmer millioner. Bliv ved med at sprede sig, ligesom pesten, ja yeah. Ruller langs Bellevue i en luksusvis. Sommeren giver mig det déjà vu. Som om alle de bliver fri. Føler mig heldig, jeg kom igen. Det mentale mark har savnet solen alt for længe. Jeg glemte hvordan det er, løber blindt ind til det mørke. Har savnet solen alt for længe. Jeg glemmer hvad jeg var, til at mindes hvem jeg sørger for at finde mig selv. Smider bilen langs kysten, jeg griner af frygten. Velsignet er løftet, skylder kun Gud. Gav mig lige hvad jeg ønskede. Søn af immigranter, familier der flygtede. Heller ydmygen at være rig og berygtet. Men mere ved at mere, jeg var lige ved at miste. Så jeg var lige ved at miste. Når jeg går bort, bliver jeg smil til det sidste. Færdig lukker låd på min kiste, ja. Ruller langs Bellevue man giver mig det chavu. Som om alle de bliver fri igen. Ja, føler mig ny. Føler mig heldig, jeg kom igen. Det mentale mørke har savnet solen alt for læg. Barn, at alle laver køer de penge som vi har. Her for at blive, selvom alting er lis. Hold ind til siden og køb dig en is. For så er alt det toppet og sukker og fløde. Hvis du tror på dig selv til det sidst. Bare kig ud over de her blå bølger og nyd det her liv, det er dit, ja.
Minn dik is-silta mużikali Daniża, moderna ta' dawn iż-żminijiet, nirritornaw għall-intervista biex nikkonkludu l-intervista fil-fatt mal-personalità mid-Danimarka li qed intervista f'din l-edizzjoni speċjali ta' Mingħajnejn Barranin, Thor Pedersen. Two things before we conclude, Thor. Well, number one is remind us your social media pages, your website, so that our listeners can find out more about you, read. You have blogs and articles that you wrote over the 10 years, so people can find out more
about your adventures, and will there be a book maybe or a documentary on television in the future? Could you tell us about that?
Sure. So the social media is called Once Upon a Saga. So it's the same if you wanted to say Once Upon a Time, but instead of time, it's S-A-G-A, Saga, Once Upon a Saga. But you can also look me up as Thor Peterson and then just write Every Country Without Flying or something like that, and I'm sure you'll find me. There's
lots of
Facebook,
articles.
There's Instagram.
As we said, you've been covered on CNN, BBC, I mean, all the major news portals of the world have written about you. Do go on.
Yeah. Well, there's Facebook, Instagram, there's Twitter, there's YouTube, there's TikTok, and there's a blog as well. We are going to be writing a book by the end of this year, maybe the beginning of next year. So for sure, there will be a book in 2024. I'm going on a speaking tour in Denmark next year, and I'm also available for speaking engagements all around the world when people, they book me. And then we have a documentary, which we've been working on for the last 4 years now. And it's being edited and put together, and it will be ready in 2024.
That's wonderful. I hope we get to see that.
I hope so too.
It sounds like the kind of program that should go on Discovery or National Geographic or, you know, one of the major international channels.
There's still a lot that's being negotiated. So there's a possibility it will be sold to Netflix. And it will end up so everyone can see it on Netflix.
Oh, good.
There's a chance it will go on another big streaming platform as well. So we don't really know.
Well, best of luck for that. So this is what your life is going to be like for the next couple of years, sort of continuing the saga, but in Denmark. I mean, do you see yourself ever going back to some sort of 9-to-5 job? Or is your life from now on, you know, new adventures? What's the rest of your life going to be?
Yeah, I don't see myself going back to a 9-to-5. Even before this project, it wasn't 9-to-5 because I was working on these different projects around the world, like Libya and Bangladesh and so on. And that was never 9-to-5. For me, I hope that I'll be able to do a couple of speaking engagements every month, and that that will be able to sustain me financially. Then I have my wife, and we hope that we can start a family. I still want to travel. I want to go on adventures, but smaller adventures, not something that takes a decade. I get, especially these days, I have a lot of invitations. So very soon I'll be going to Berlin for a gala there. And then I'm going to France afterwards, where I'll be joining the project sponsor, which was Salomon, a French sporting goods company that has sponsored my footwear and some of my clothing. And they're also behind the documentary. And then I'll be coming home again. I'm going to Azerbaijan later this year as well. So there's some interesting travel coming up, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, this has been an incredible adventure for me too, hearing all your stories. And I look forward to reading more about them on your websites and social media. And perhaps one day we will actually meet on one of your future trips. And
it would be very nice.
The only man in the world who has traveled to every single country in the world without using an aeroplane. So,
thank you so much for having me on your radio show.
A pleasure. Thor Peterson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nikonkludi hawnhekk din l-edizzjoni ta' Minajnejn Barranin, l-intervista li kelli ma' Thor Peterson mid-Danimarka illi żar kull pajjiż fid-dinja, inkluż Malta, waqt proġett ta' vjaġġi illi għamel proġett illi anka ġablu fama internazzjonali u intervisti minn stazzjonijiet internazzjonali magħrufa tal-aħbarijiet bħall-BBC u CNN u bosta stazzjonijiet oħrajn anka hawnhekk fuq Campus 103.7 nirringrazzja lil Thor illi kien ġentili biżejjed illi tagħna intervista wkoll. U għal ħafna affarijiet pożittivi dwar pajjiżna u żmien li qatta hawnhekk. Aħna nistidnuh li jarġa' iżurna Thor Peterson jinstaba li huwa bniedem verament mill-aħjar u ħadd pjaċir ħafna l-intervistah.
edizzjoni speċjali mela ta' Minajnejn Barranin. Nirritorna il-ġimgħa d-dieħla b'edizzjoni oħra aktar tradizzjonali fejn intervista persuna barranija illi tgħix f'pajjiżna jew xi ħadd Malti li għadta ħafna żmien minn ħajtu barra minn Malta u mbagħad irritorna hawnhekk nitkellmu dwar iż-żewġ jew ħafna pajjiżi illi fihom għexu dawn il-mistiedna u ovvjament nitkellmu dwar il-ħajja tagħhom f'pajjiżna. Minajnejn Barranin fuq 103.7 Campus, eventualment li jixxandru fuq l-FM u DAB u anka live minn fuq il-sit elettroniku. Il-programmi jittellaw fuq il-sit elettroniku fejn tkunu tistgħu tisimgħuhom meta u fejn tridu bħala poddati. Mela, Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus 103.7. Grazzi.